This is the last day of this March 2015 seven-day session. And we'll take up a koan today. This is from the collection of koans called in Japanese, the Shoyo Roku, the Book of Serenity, or the Book of Equanimity. And this is number 87 in that collection. It's 100 koans. Sushans, with or without. And here's how it goes. Sushan came to Guishan and said, "I've heard that you say, to be with words or without words is like wisteria wound around a tree." And then Sushan says, "If suddenly the tree falls and the wisteria withers, where will the words go?" Guishan burst into laughter. Sushan said, "I've come 1,000 miles, even selling my belongings, to see you. Why do you make light of me, teacher?" Guishan called to his attendant and said, "Get some money and give it to this monk for his travel expenses." Then he said, "Someday there will be a one-eyed dragon who will let you open your eyes." Later, Sushan went to Ming Zhao and told him about this. Ming Zhao said, "We may say that Guishan was right from head to tail, but he didn't meet the one who knows." Sushan then asked him, "If the tree falls and the wisteria withers, where will the words go?" Ming Zhao said, "That would make Guishan laugh all the more." And at these words, Sushan had an awakening. Then he said, "From the first, Guishan's laughter had a sword." If, material on all three of these guys. Let's start with Sushan, because that's how the case begins. In another book, one book of these collections has his name as Sushan, but we're going to go with Sushan. That's another book said that. So anyway, Sushan. I'll start by reading from Zen's Chinese Heritage by Andy Ferguson. He's from the 9th century, probably. He was a disciple and a Dharma heir of Dongshan. Dongshan was one of the co-founders of the Soto school. It became the Soto school. Sushan was not the other founder with Dongshan, but he was his Dharma heir. And it says his search for enlightenment took him to many teachers. He first studied with a teacher named Yuan Zheng. One day he told his teacher, "I'm traveling east to the capital city of Luoyang." And then he practiced in Luoyang. No, he studied. Let's see here. No, he studied. He didn't practice. He studied. He studied in Luoyang for less than a year. Then one day he suddenly said, "Seeking brings only darkness, and talking isn't as good as silence. Forget oneself and help others. The false can't compare to the true." Seeking brings only darkness. It's the nature of seeking that we're in the dark. If we weren't in the dark, we wouldn't be seeking. And then he went to train under Dongshan, whose Dharma heir he became. He asked Dongshan, in words not yet heard, please, Master, provide me instruction. Dongshan said, I don't say people can't realize it. Sushan said, can it be obtained through practice or not? Dongshan said, are you realizing it now through practice? Sushan said, not realizing it through practice should not be avoided. And it's pretty complicated positives and negatives here. It seems to be have been quite typical of the Chinese style. The what may be behind this is not wanting to get caught in assertion. As soon as we say something is, then it stands apart from something else. But as long as you put it in the negative, like Nagarjuna's not this, not that, or that linguistic, I emphasize linguistic definition of mu, it's not what you think, then you're on safe ground. Because it's not offering an answer. Now I'm going to skip over to another source for Sushan. This is Zen Dust. Zen Dust, for many years of American Zen, Zen Dust was the authoritative source of material on the masters until Andy Ferguson's Zen's Chinese Heritage came around. In here, we have the following information about Sushan. We have something here that wasn't in the Ferguson book. Before going to Dongshan, that when it said he was dissatisfied, he became dissatisfied and exclaimed, this is when he was studying, not practicing, and he became dissatisfied and said, this is just investigating line by line and counting rows of black letters. Words aren't so good as silence. This is rejecting oneself and looking to others for assistance. The false isn't as good as the true. So that's another translation of that. This is how reading immediately after a 7-day sesshin has always seemed to me. It's like just looking at rows of black letters. So strange. Not the next day. The next day is different, but immediately after a 7-day sesshin to read something so strange. After all, they're symbols. They're scratches of ink on paper. It's not the direct experience. But now this Sushan, he tucked up his robes and began his wanderings. He visited a number of famous Zen masters, the real Hall of Fame, Guishan, Yunmen, and others, and finally went to Dongshan. That's where we already mentioned that. He joined that monastic assembly. And it says here that he was an ugly man of very short stature and inclined to be sickly. He was often referred to somewhat contemptuously as Uncle Dwarf. On the other hand, he was mentally very alert. Among his fellow monks, he was the cleverest and sharpest in argument. When he was a member of Dongshan's assembly, it was said of him that His innate power in displaying the innermost mystery was that of a man who could chew the iron tip of an arrow. Everyone considered him an expert in estimating people's characters, and when it came to all kinds of samadhi, they said, "We just have to ask Uncle Dwarf." But the old records consistently speak of Sushan disparagingly. This is a complicated guy. This story is recounded here. He knew that Dongshan, this is the guy who eventually made him a Dharma heir, but not yet. He knew that Dongshan was about to transmit his Dharma to another disciple, and Uncle Dwarf secretly crawled under the master's rope-bottomed chair and lay down on his stomach. Dongshan was unaware of this. At midnight, the master handed to his disciple the jewel mirror samadhi, the secret of the five ranks and the three kinds of leakage previously given him by his master, Ungan. When the transmission was completed, Sushan bowed twice and hurried out. No, not Sushan, the other guy who just received the Dharma transmission. He bowed twice and hurried out. And then Uncle Dwarf stuck out his head and bawled, "Dongshan Zen is in the palm of my hand." Dongshan was greatly astonished. And he said, "Stealing the Dharma by using the dirtiest of means will avail you nothing." And then, according to the accounts, from then on, Sushan was unable to keep from vomiting whenever he wanted to speak about the Dharma. And it says the biographer's concluding remark undoubtedly refers to this, since the illness continued many years. But then, according to the records, he eventually received Dharma transmission from Dongshan, as he is everywhere listed as one of Dongshan's heirs. Now back to Andy Ferguson. On one occasion, Dongshan entered the hall and said, "I want you to understand this matter. You must be like a dead tree that blossoms flowers. Then you will merge with it." Sushan asked, "What about when every place is corrupted?" Dongshan said, "Venerable one, you're talking about practicing a practice. Fortunately, there is a realm of non-practicing practice. Why don't you ask about that?" Sushan said, "Practicing a non-practicing practice? Can there be such a person?" Dongshan said, "Many people will laugh at you for asking such a question." Sushan said, "In that case, my thinking has gone astray." So he's acknowledging that he doesn't understand. Dongshan said, "Astray is not astray, nor not astray." Sushan said, "What is astray?" Dongshan said, "If you say such a person, then you still don't understand." Sushan said, "What is not astray?" Dongshan said, "A place of no differentiation." I'm going to go back and hit a couple of these points. Talking about practicing, you want to... Non-practicing practice. This is transcending effort, as we ordinarily think of it, transcending striving, where there is no grasping, no looking ahead to attain anything. One is in harmony with one's self nature. This is a very advanced, very mature practice of just being mind itself. This is effortless effort that comes with long, long practice. And then his first statement, I want you to understand this matter. Direct from the heart. It's what every teacher wants a student to understand. Teachers were machines, or maybe full Buddhas. When students who've worked very hard and very long continue to fall short of realizing their true nature, we might be utterly indifferent to that. It's all the maturation process. It's just part of the way things are. Things are what they are. Everything is good. Every day is a good day. But I don't know any such teacher. Teachers are made of flesh and blood, and they want their students to understand. And when they fall short of that, of course, inevitably, there is at least a trace of disappointment, sadness. If the teacher is someone of understanding, well, it's not something that a teacher would carry around with them for very long. But how can we not be a little bit disappointed? Knowing that there's no telling how long any of us will live. Now that bit of disappointment is leavened, of course, with what I already said, with the recognition that ultimately everything will occur in its time. Here's another All right, just gonna take it to the end here of Sushan's life. When Sushan was about to die, he composed the following verse. My way lies outside the blue emptiness. White clouds have no place to drift. In the world is a rootless tree, yellow leaves sent back by the wind. And now, Guishan, that's the first guy that Sushan went to Now, this is not the famous Guishan of other koans, whose Japanese name is Isan. This is a different Guishan. One of his other names is Lazi An, which is I recognize from the Da Wei material we were reading most of the Sesshin. This Guishan Da An, was a disciple of the great Hyakujo. He started off studying the Vinaya, the monastic rules and regulations, and then he declared, "Despite my hard efforts, I still haven't encountered the principle of the great mystery." So off he went in search of the truth. When he met Baijan, he bowed and asked, "This student seeks to know Buddha. How can I do so?" Baijan said, "It's like riding the ox looking for the ox." That's a good one. It's like riding the ox looking for the ox. Guishan said, "After finding it, then what?" Baijiang said, "It's like riding the ox and arriving home." Guishan then asked, "How does one ultimately uphold and sustain this?" Baijiang said, "It's like an ox herder who, grasping his staff, watches the ox so that he doesn't transgress by eating other people's sprouts and grain." So this is the classic metaphor for Zen practice. Ox herding, pulling back the ox when it strays. And by the way, this Guishan was a brother, a Dharma brother of the famous Guishan from other koans. Now back still at this Guishan, he once addressed the monks, saying, "What are you all seeking from me by coming here? If you want to become a Buddha, then you should know that you yourself are Buddha. Why are you running around from place to place like thirsty deer chasing a mirage? When will you ever succeed? You want to be a Buddha, but you don't recognize that your topsy-turvy, contradictory ideas, your deluded understandings, your mind, which believes in innumerable beings, purity and pollution, that it is just this mind that is the authentic, original, awakened mind of Buddha. Where else will you go to find it? I've spent the last 30 years here on Mount Gui, eating Guishan's rice, shitting Guishan's shit, but not practicing Guishan's Zen. I just mind an old water buffalo. If he wanders off the road into the grass, then I pull him back by his nose ring. If he eats someone else's rice shoots, then I use the whip to move him away. After such a long training period, he's become very lovable, and he obeys my words. Now he pulls the great vehicle, the Mahayana, always staying where I can see him the whole day through, and he can't be driven away." Again, a very deep state of not just enlightenment, but the enlightenment integrated into his daily life. Staying all day where I can see him and he can't be driven away. He's become very lovable. Even this mind that keeps wandering is not something we need to fight or oppose or have any quarrel with. He continues, "Each one of you has a priceless treasure. There is light emanating from your eyes, which illuminates mountains, rivers, and the great earth. There is light radiating from your ears, which apprehends all good and evil sounds. The six senses, day and night they emanate light, and this is called the light emanating samadhi. You yourself can't comprehend it, but it is reflected in the four great bodies. It is completely supported within and without, and never unbalanced. He's talking to everyone here, by the way. It's like someone with a heavy load on his back crossing a bridge made from a single tree trunk, but never losing his step. And now if you ask, what is it that provides this support and where it is revealed, then I just say that not a single hair of it can be seen. No wonder the monk Zhigong said, searching inside and out, you'll find nothing. Actions in the causational realm are a big muddle. Take care. This allusion to crossing a bridge with a heavy load on your back and never losing your step. He's referring to the innate equilibrium of our true nature, where there's nothing lacking, nothing in excess, everything in perfect balance. This is our original nature. Just one more here. A monk asked Guishan, where will you flee to if Wang Chao's troops come? Seems like half of the stories you read about from ancient China is set against the backdrop of civil war. So this must have been some general. Where will you flee to if Wang Chao's troops come? Guishan said, inside Skanda's mountain. Skandas refers to, these are the elements that make up an individual. The monk said, when they suddenly grab you, then what? Guishan said, commander distress. Even Guishan, if he's seized and with the threat of death, how could there be no trace of distress? And finally, the final character in this koan, Ming Zhao. Now, I have to confess, I'm not certain that the Ming Zhao, the one Ming Zhao in this collection of Zen's Chinese heritage, is the same one. I've spent much of my break period this morning trying to sort it out and never came to a certain conclusion. But some good stuff in here. So even if it's not that Ming Zhao, it's a pretty impressive guy. No dates listed for this guy. That's part of the problem in finding out which one. It is recorded that Ming Zhao's quick and incisive Zen style led his contemporaries to fear his formidable skills in Dharma combat. He taught at Wu Zhao for 40 years. I'll just pluck out two or three of the dialogues here. A monk raised a question to Ming Zhao concerning the story of Yangshan sticking a hoe in the ground. He said, did the ancients meaning lie in his clasping his hands, or was it in his sticking the hoe in the ground? Ming Zhao called his name. Ching. Ching responded, yes. Ming Zhao said, are you still dreaming about Yangshan? Ching said, I don't want the master to give an explanation of this. I just want to talk about it. Ming Zhao said, if you only want to talk, then there are 1,500 teachers in front of the hall. Here's another one. When Meng Zhao was at Jizhu Temple in Wuzhou, he often did not get his ration of pure water. The temple attendant asked him, "Venerable one, you don't know tainted from pure. Why don't you get your pure water?" Meng Zhao jumped off the meditation bench, picked up the pure water pitcher, and said, "Is this tainted or pure?" The attendant didn't answer. Meng Zhao then broke the pitcher. Masters are always trying to direct us, point us to what is beyond our ordinary mind, our ordinary discriminating mind. When Meng Zhao was near death, he went into the hall to say farewell to the monks and give them final instructions. A monk asked, "Master, where will you be 100 years from now?" Meng Zhao lifted one foot and said, "Look beneath my foot." In the middle of the night, he said to his attendant, "Formerly, at the assembly on Vulture Peak, the Tathagata Shakyamuni lifted both feet and they emitted 100 rays of brilliant light." Meng Zhao then lifted his feet and said, "How many do I have?" The attendant said, "In former times, Shakyamuni. Tonight, the master." Meng Zhao then pointed at the attendant's eyebrows and said, "You're not forsaking me?" And then Meng Zhao recited a verse. "A flashing blade exposes the monastery's complete majesty. All of you, protect it well. Within the fire, an iron ox gives birth to a calf. At this juncture, who will compile my teaching?" And after reciting this verse, Meng Zhao sat in a cross-legged position and passed away. All right. Now, to the koan itself. I don't have a lot that I feel I can say about the koan. It's one of those. Always have to be wary of not saying too much about these koans for the sake of people who might work on them someday. But it starts again. Sushan came to Guishan and said, "That I heard that you say, to be with words or without words is like wisteria wound around a tree." This is an elaborate version of a not uncommon challenge of what is beyond both words and silence. Here, he adds this extra twist, pun intended, and says, "If suddenly the tree falls and the wisteria withers, where will the words go?" And Guishan burst into laughter. And Sushan is hurt by this. He's miffed. "I've come 1,000 miles, even selling my belongings to see you. Why are you making light of me, teacher?" Guishan called to his attendant, "All right, get some money and give it to this monk for his travel expenses." And then he said, "Someday there will be a one-eyed dragon who will let you open your eyes." Dragon, of course, is a symbol in Zen of enlightenment, the enlightened mind. Now this turns out this was a prophecy, and a correct one, because then when Sushan went to Meng Zhao, Meng Zhao literally had only one eye. Sushan went to him and told him about the exchange he had had with Guishan. Meng Zhao said, "We may say that Guishan was right from head to tail, but he didn't meet the one who knows. How so? What does Ming Zhao mean that Guishan and his laughter and his then giving him some money for his expenses and sending him to Ming Zhao, that Ming Zhao didn't meet the one who knows? It sounds like he was finding fault with him. It sounds like. Sushan then turns to Ming Zhao and says, "All right then, if the tree falls and the wisteria withers, where will the words go?" To which Ming Zhao said, "That would make Guishan laugh all the more." And at these words, Sushan had an awakening. Then he said, "From the first, Guishan's laughter had a sword." Remember, Sushan, we read, was extraordinarily acute and no doubt good with words. So this would have been quite a problem for him. Where will the words go? When he kind of pouts and says, "I've come 1,000 miles, even selling my belongings to see you, why do you make light of me?" He seems to be taking Guishan's laughter as laughing at him. I've sometimes encountered that in Doksan. Someone says something that just tickles me to death and I laugh and they think I'm laughing at them. From the first, Guishan's laughter had a sword. Seems that it was just what Sushan needed to set him up, to send him to Ming Zhao in the state of mind where he was still working with this question and with Guishan's response of laughing. Time is up. We'll stop now and recite the four vows.